The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Hey, I'm coming to you from deep in the heart of the state of independence, the birthplace of American liberty, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I'm your Thursday host here on the National Intel Report, live on Republic Broadcasting Network and rebroadcast as Liberty Lighthouse on Mojo 50 Radio, WBN 324 Talk Radio, and Patriot Nation Radio Network. I'm Peter Seraphine.
A man, a legend,
with a great beard.
With the greatest beard in radio.
This guy is the sweetest, nicest, most gentlest person you've ever met in your life.
The man's really insightful and pretty freaking smart.
With wit, sharp like safety scissors.
I would walk over hot coals for this guy.
The man with that golden voice behind the microphone.
He's got a big, fat, juicy, beautiful brain.
The Nostradamus of political prognostication. Your host, Peter Seraphine.
That's right. Free speech is not free. Support this free speech network. Donate if you can. Buy merchandise. Or support the sponsors. Buy stuff from the sponsors. And if you can't afford to buy stuff right now, because Lord knows I would understand that, then maybe just email the sponsor and say, hey, I heard you. I heard you on this network and wanted to know you heard the message. And I'll buy something later when the economy isn't crap. I was supposed to have a guest with us in the, well, he was going to actually co-host with me for the entire 2 hours. Mr. Ron Edwards, host of the Ron Edwards Experience and the Edwards Notebook. But he called me just an hour or two ago that he's having a family emergency. And it's the sit bedside vigil kind of family emergency. So I will not fault him for not being here. And I hope you won't either. But this is the last show I'm going to host before Tuesday's election. So I want to talk about elections. I want to talk about what did elections look like in 1787 when our Constitution was written? How have they changed from then to now? And do we need to change them back? Or maybe we need to be somewhere in the middle. I have my opinions. I've done my research. I know what I think already. But this is a live radio program, so I want to know what you think about this topic, too, as we go along. So don't forget to call in to 512-248-8252 or 800-313-9443. Now, if we think back to the original state of voting and elections in the United States of America, I think all the way back to 1787 when the Constitution was written. We the people, the citizens of the United States of America, the only federal job that we cast a vote for was our representatives in the House of Representatives. The Senate was originally appointed by the state legislatures, and the president was elected by the Electoral College. And we the people, we the citizens, had no direct vote for either the Senate or the presidency. The only way we influenced those votes was indirectly. We elected the Senate. So then, I'm sorry, we elected our state houses. We elected our state legislatures. And they were the ones responsible for electing the Senate. So we indirectly affected who was in the Senate. And the same with the presidency. The Electoral College was affected by what we, the people, thought. But they, you know, we didn't vote then. So let's start. Let's break them down. Let's look at them one at a time. Makes sense to you? Makes sense to me to do it that way. So let's talk about the House of Representatives. Now, the U.S. House of Representatives was the only job that we voted for. And originally, it was one representative per X number of population. And originally, I think it was 30,000 citizens. One per 30,000. Now, given a 330 million population that we have today, divided that by, say, 30,000 per representative, if we still had that rule, we would have to have 11,000 members of the House of Representatives right now to represent us, one representative per 30,000 citizens. Now, I don't know about you, but 11,000 seems like that's a pretty big number. That's a lot of representatives. But if there were 11,000 of them, it'd be a little harder to count the votes, right? Maybe that would slow things down in Washington a little bit. Maybe. So in 1929, the Permanent Apportionment Act capped the number of members of the House of Representatives at 435. So now, instead of, you know, a representative for every so many citizens, there are 435 representatives, and we divide that by the number of citizens that we have. So if you take that same, you know, 330 million-ish population, and you divide it by the 435 members of the House, you're looking at each member of the House now represents a little over 750,000 citizens. Now, the idea of the House of Representatives was, you know, they were the one closest to the people. The districts were relatively small. You could know these people. These people likely knew you. But now the districts, well, 750,000 people per representative. That's a lot of people. The districts, every time the population goes up, the districts get a little bigger. So are we stepping away from that closeness to our House of Representatives representatives? Are we losing that connection because of our sheer size and the Permanent Apportionment Act? That's a debate worth having, in my opinion. But where would you house 11,000 representatives if we went back to the one per 30,000? I don't know how that would work either. Either way, we have what we have. Now, along the way, we get district equality problems, right? So each representative in the House is assigned to a supposedly small district with here in the United States. But who draws those district lines? Well, they're done by the state houses, your state legislatures, usually. And of course, anytime you get the lawmakers involved, well, there's a little shady stuff. Most common is, gerrymandering. We all know what gerrymandering is, right? That's when you draw crooked, squiggly lines to draw your districts so that you reach out and grab this little conservative population over here or grab this little liberal population over there to try to make a district either more conservative or more liberal. Now, both sides do this, both the Democrats and the Republicans, they both gerrymander quite regularly. But a while back, I'm going to say the 1970s, I forgot the right to date down, but a while back, the U.S. Supreme Court had to step in and set some rules about districts. And the biggest rule that they created, the number one thing that came down from the Supreme Court, was that these districts had to have roughly equal populations. See, before, states would draw their districts and they would do it by whatever dividing line they chose at the time. Now they have to have relatively equal populations. So this seems like a good time for me to tell you about the sponsor of this first segment of tonight's show. And that is ZStackLife.com. Y'all remember Dr. Vladimir Zelenko. He was the first doctor, one of the first doctors to stand up and say, hey, you know, I've treated a whole bunch of people for this COVID thing, and I've only lost one or two because I'm using hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and, you know, treating people early and saving lives. Well, unfortunately, Dr. Z died a couple of months ago. He had cancer. And, before he died, he set up the Freedom Fighters Foundation. And one of the ways that you can support the Freedom Fighters Foundation and this show is to go to ZStackLife.com and you buy his ZStack product. Use the code Lighthouse. ZStack is how you can supercharge your immune system with this coming cold and flu season. So that's ZStackLife.com, code Lighthouse, to support the Freedom Fighters Foundation, this show, and supercharge your immune system. All right, so gerrymandering districts has become a really big issue. Here in Pennsylvania, where I am, we actually have a nonprofit organization called Fair District PA that is it's a nonprofit that lobbies to have the districts drawn as fairly as possible. And I've had a couple of ideas about how to draw these district lines myself. So you got this whole, you know, equal populations thing. What if district lines, like, aren't ever allowed to cross county lines? See, that would make sense to me. So that you can have whole counties or parts of counties in a district, but you couldn't cross over those county lines, just to make, you know, weird out-shooting, grabbing, gerrymandered things. That was one idea. So you might have four districts inside of a county, but you might have another district that's five full counties. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's making sense to you, but it makes sense to me. Another idea that was presented by a friend of mine was that a district maybe shouldn't have more than four corners. So that, again, you have, you know, square, rectangle, parallelogram, trapezoid, maybe triangle. But you can't have these odd-shaped, completely obviously gerrymandered districts that reach out and grab those select populations that they want to. Now, why is this important? This is one of the reasons we need to pay attention to what's going on in our state legislatures. See, all the national news talks about what goes on in Washington, D.C. There's not nearly enough talk about what's going on in your own state legislature. And, well, your state legislature has changed quite a bit. It changes these districts pretty regularly. Then it, well, sometimes your state even changes the Constitution. So before we move on to the Senate, any questions, comments, or concerns about what we've talked about regarding the House of Representatives and voting for the House of Representatives, you know the phone number, 512-248-8252. Let's talk about the Senate next. In the Senate, like I said at the opening of the show, The Senate was originally appointed by the state legislators. Again, another reason to pay attention to what goes on in your state capital. The whole idea behind the Senate being appointed by the state legislatures is that our founding fathers, well, they feared tyranny. We all know that. But they also feared too much democracy. That's why they designed the three federally elected jobs, House, Senate, and presidency, to be elected three different ways by three different groups of people and serve three different lengths of terms. We've changed that, haven't we? See, the founders feared the all-powerful government. They feared democracy as well. In Federalist Paper number 55, if I remember right, Madison talks about the Senate is supposed to be the reason over passion. See, we the people, but we get passionate. We the John Q. citizens, we're fickle. We let our passions guide us a lot. Maybe not you individually or me individually, but as a whole, we get that mob mentality. And we get guided by passion. Now, the Senate being appointed by the state legislators, they were supposed to be the reason to, you know, temper the passions of the House, to slow it down. That's right. The Senate was supposed to slow down the legislature. Anytime you think, our government doesn't do anything, I want you to think about that. Our government is, you know, perceived as being slow and inefficient by a lot of people. It's slow on purpose. Slow because of the fear of democracy and the fear of tyranny. So who asked for the 17th Amendment, right? The 17th Amendment comes along and it changes how senators get their jobs, makes it a statewide popular vote. But it also gave a way to fill a vacancy quickly, something that was lacking in most states prior to the 17th Amendment. Well, it was the state legislators, mostly, that were asking for the 17th Amendment. There were some people out there. There were people in the public that seemed to think that we had too much corruption in our state houses, thought that the Senate seats were being bought by rich, powerful people. You wouldn't think that would happen today, would you? So there were people that thought that, but the state houses had a bigger problem. See, your state legislatures, well, they didn't get along very well all the time either. They were just as divided as the national legislature, just as divided as Congress, just like today in a lot of states. Many of the states were evenly divided and couldn't get a majority vote to appoint a senator. See, and that's one of the problems. The Constitution said shall be elected by a majority, not a simple plurality. So getting a majority in an evenly divided state house to agree to one person to be one of the two that went to Washington, D.C. and represented that state, that became more and more difficult. So difficult that the 17th Amendment was first proposed in 1829. They were already having problems with senators in 1829. Was that 42 years after the Constitution was written and ratified? It's pretty rough. So there was there's the bribery and the corruption and the bought seats. There was deadlock where they couldn't get enough votes. And all of these things led to vacancies in the Senate. Between 1870 and 1913, there were 45 vacancies in the Senate. 45 vacancies that the state houses couldn't agree enough to fill. See, the problem with the Constitution as it was written was that it said that the state legislators had to appoint the senators by a majority vote. But there was nothing in there about what happened when there was a vacancy. So if there was a vacancy, they just had to vote all over again. They had to start all over. And again, had to get that majority vote for one candidate to fill a Senate seat. And what happened, at one point, it got to be so bad that the federal government wrote one of the first laws that really reached down into the states and was one of the first real power grabs by our federal government. The federal government basically wrote the rules and said that states had to do it. They had to come up with this vote. And if they couldn't do it by the first day of their legislature, their session or whatever, they had to vote on it every day. So originally what it was is, Congress, your state house gets together and they were allowed to divide up into their state house and their state senate or the whatever you call your state houses, whatever you call the two chambers of your state house. And they debated and they voted. So the state house would vote for candidate A. And if the state senate would vote for candidate A as well, then it went along pretty smooth. But if the state house and the state senate didn't match, they voted for two different candidates, then this new federal law required a joint session of your state house and required that they vote for a candidate every day until they found one. Well, imagine that. Joint session of Congress in your state, your joint session of your state legislature, having to debate candidates every day and vote on candidates every day. What other work are they getting done? Are they fixing the roads? Doubt it. Are they doing anything good for your state while they're doing that? I doubt it. That also made for more corruption and more bribery. Yeah, a candidate would, let's say, candidate would give their representatives, give the state legislature money for their vote. Then they'd have the vote. But it was a deadlocked vote, so the candidate didn't win. Well, then some of those corrupt legislators would go back to that candidate, demand more money for another vote. So there was definitely corruption at the state level. There was a lot of bribery, a lot of bought seats. But the 17th Amendment, I don't think that was the right answer. I think what the 17th Amendment did was far more harmful to our entire system of government than having those vacancies. To talk about that on the other side of this break, we'll be back in 3 minutes, my friends.
Day by day, night after night. Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of Happy Packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
About the Senate and what happened to it after the 17th Amendment. And I think that the 17th Amendment turned the Senate into a glorified version of the House of Representatives. That's all I did. It changed who votes for senators. It changed it from the state houses to you and I, the citizens of a particular state. So now their constituency went from a couple of hundred people to a couple of million people. Again, they lost the connection to the people that votes them, elects them. So we got, in the House of Representatives, the representative districts have gotten so big that they can't really be connected to their people there anymore. And now the senators, instead of going back to the couple of hundred people in the state houses, now they go back to the couple of million people in a state. So again, they've lost that connection. See, if a senator was screwing up, not doing what they said they would do, and they had to report back to 200 people, those 200 people would know, right? Like, the state house would know. That's what they do. They pay attention to it because it's only 200 people. Not only that, the state houses, being the ones that pointed them, one of the things I'm sure that the state houses would do before they elect somebody was make sure that that person was going to Washington, D.C. to protect the rights of that state, protect the sovereignty of that state, to enforce the 10th Amendment. Right? But that's not what happened. 17th Amendment comes around, and that check against the federal government, against the overreach, against the expansion, it's gone. All because of the 17th Amendment. Basically, in my opinion, basically because states were whining and they were having a hard time filling the vacancies and getting people in the Senate, they passed the buck. But they celebrated it as more democracy, more direct democracy. Exactly what our founding fathers tried to avoid. Founding fathers could have written it so that there was a House and a Senate, both of which were elected the way they are today. They chose not to for a very specific reason. Reason over passion, according to Madison and Federalist 55. See, now the senators basically represent the government. They represent the big, bad federal machine instead of the states that they come from. It was a complete power flip. You know, but you want to know the real reason why it actually happened? I mean, I gave you the reasons the states asked for it. The states asked for it because they were whining that they couldn't fill the vacancies themselves, that they couldn't get people appointed, that there were 45 vacancies, that, you know, the bribery and the corruption at the state level. But the real reason that Congress introduced the 17th Amendment into Congress and then sent it out to be ratified by the states, real reason was, for the second time, we were pretty close to having a convention of states. See, states had gotten together and passed resolutions calling for a convention of states. That's happened once before, just prior to the Civil War. Carolinas were complaining about the new tariffs, and they were starting to call for a convention of states. Then the federal government backed down. Then around 1910, they were almost there. They were getting really close to having a convention of states. And the government gave in. The federal government acquiesced again. Now, I don't know what you think about a convention of states. I think it could be a good thing and it could be disastrous. We'll never know. Hopefully. I don't know. Might be great. Might be terrible. But it was a tool that was put into the Constitution. Article 5. Without debate. See, all these guys that were together, these people there to write the Constitution, to frame a new government, wrote all of this stuff. Wrote a section, Article 5, about how to amend the Constitution. But it was all about how the federal government could amend the Constitution. And then, I don't remember who proposed it, but then one of the delegates said, what if people want to change the Constitution? Why isn't that there? And the second part of the Article 5, explaining how a convention of states can be called, was added. with no debate. Every person there thought it was a good idea. But every time our country gets close to using it, the federal government acquiesces or gives in at least a little bit. I think our federal government's afraid of an Article 5 Convention of States. I think that's a good thing. The fact that they're afraid that we might use that tool, that has to be a good thing. I've gone back and forth on the idea of a convention of states. If you are a big believer in, or a big supporter of, or a big opponent to, either way, would you give me a call and tell me what you think? 512-248-8252 or toll-free 800-313-9443.
At Romika Designs, we're more than just a laser engraving and specialty design company. Much more. I'm Ron Phillips, co-owner of Romika Designs, and we're honored to work with our affiliates like Liberty Lighthouse to bring you professional laser engraving and customization. Great for one-of-a-kind gifts, home decor, business and specialty items, or personalized and logo designs created just for you or your company. Allow Romika Designs and Liberty Lighthouse to become your go-to gift and specialty project partner. Romika Designs can help make your ideas a reality. We're ready to help you design and create that special gift for any occasion, or engrave your personal or business logo on just about any product. All you have to do is simply email us with your ideas. We specialize in custom design and we'd be honored to have the opportunity to discuss it with you. Visit us on the web at romikadesigns.com and use promo code Lighthouse during checkout to support Liberty Lighthouse with Peter Serafine.
I do appreciate it. Romika Designs is an awesome place. It's coming up on Christmas time, so if you're looking for like really unique, special, custom laser engraved gifts, it's cool stuff. So yeah, Romika Designs, Romika Designs.com. Should we move on to the presidency? How the president is elected and how it might be changed and how terrible that would be, in my personal opinion. So we talked about the House, we talked about the Senate, so let's talk about the presidency. The presidency is elected by an electoral college. Each state decides how to appoint the electors in their electoral college. There is absolutely nothing in the U.S. Constitution about a popular vote for president. There's nothing in there at all about you and I, citizens, voting for who will be president, commander-in-chief. Nothing at all. But there is something on the mark, on the horizon. Something that really, really scares me. We'll get to that right after we talk to Sarah in Oregon. On line one, welcome to National Intel, Sarah.
Welcome, Peter. How you do?
I do well. How do you do?
Pretty much.
You have an opinion of the Convention of States, good or bad?
It could be good, but it could be bad as well.
So you're kind of like me, stuck in the middle?
Yeah.
That's fair enough.
Peace out. I'm out.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
So what scares me about the presidential election prospects of the future? Well, the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. If you don't know what this is, you need to look it up. This is... I want to say it's tyranny. I want to say it is dirty, underhanded, unlawful, unconstitutional gibberish. But it's not. It's a sneaky trick. But I honestly can't see how it could be thrown out as illegal or unconstitutional. So what it is the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. is an agreement between states that those states that agree will put their electoral votes behind whichever presidential candidate has the most popular votes. Now, the agreement is written in such a way that it does not take effect until they have the 253 or 35, until they have enough electoral votes in the agreement to decide the election. As of right now, 16 states have signed on to this. I'm going to list these states. And if you live in one of these states, you need to make sure, you need to lobby your state house. You need to harass your state representatives. Call them every day. Write them every day. I want you to be like Andy Dufresne in Shawshank Redemption, writing to get a library every day to get out of this agreement. And those states are Delaware, Hawaii, Rhode Island, Vermont, Colorado, Connecticut, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New Mexico, Oregon, Sarah, Washington, California, Illinois, and New York. Those 16 states have already agreed to join the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. Those 16 states represent 195 electoral votes. 9 other states, Arizona, Maine, Michigan, Minnesota, North Carolina, Nevada, Oklahoma, and Virginia have passed this resolution through one of their two houses of Congress, state legislatures. They are only 40 votes shy, 40 electoral votes, something like that, to this becoming effective. And that means that the popular vote is the only vote that'll ever matter in a presidential election again. That turns our country into a democracy, the exact thing our founding fathers fought against. The National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, let me tell you why I hate it. Not only because it fundamentally destroys the structure of our republic. I want you to think about this. You took the time to research who you wanted to be your president. You went down to the voting station and you cast your ballot. And a majority of the people in your state all voted for candidate A. But because more people, popular vote-wise, more people went for candidate B, your state legislature is going to put your state's votes to candidate B that you did not vote for. The National Popular Vote Interstate Compact gets state legislators to ignore the will of the people of their own state based on the popular vote of the nation. That is fundamentally unfederalist. You need, if you live in any of those states that I just listed, you need to stand up. You need to speak out. You need to make sure that this never happens. You need to oppose this. This is the worst thing that can possibly happen in our elections. We've already lost the Senate. The Senate is already popular vote. There's three jobs three elected jobs in our federal government. Three of them. Only one of which is supposed to be a popular vote. Now two of them are, and our lefty friends are pushing to make the third one a popular vote as well. Democracies don't work. We are too close to democracy now. Why do you think we're $31 trillion in debt? Because we, the people, en masse, by and large, we keep voting for whoever says they're going to give us the biggest checks or the nicest, baddest raises or whatever. That is inherently the problem with democracy. The people are easily bought. That's why we need to fight democracy. We need to fight anybody who stands up and even calls our country a democracy. We are not a democracy. We were not structured that way, but we're getting there. We're moving in that direction. And the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact is one way that they're doing it, and they're doing it well. They're getting really close. Have you seen this on the news? Do you hear about this regularly? This needs to be talked about everywhere. This is freaking huge. This is a complete structural change to how we elect a president. But I don't hear it covered nearly enough. I've written about it quite a while ago. If you go to liberty-lighthouse.com, go to the blog page and scroll down. I wrote an article on it. I got it syndicated in a couple of different places. I've talked about it on my show, Liberty Lighthouse. This is bad. Even if you're not a politically active person, this is something worth becoming active over. I don't know how else to beat that. I don't know how else to emphasize that. I cannot overstress the importance of stopping the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. Anyway, the other big thing that's changed in our elections, parties and primaries. Let's talk about primaries first. Why is government involved in primary elections at all? Why are there any laws in any state about primary elections? Think about it. Like, really, what is a primary election? A primary election is a political party, which is a private organization, choosing what candidate they wish to put on the ballot. What does that have to do with the government? Why are there laws? Why? I don't get that at all. I will never understand that. But those laws exist because of the Uniparty. The Democrats and the Republicans have worked together to pass these laws to try to exclude all other parties and exclude independent voices and keep those people from getting on ballots. Make it very, very hard for anyone to get elected who isn't willing to kowtow and take the name Democrat or Republican. See, I think, well, there are five nationally recognized political parties.
the Democrats, the Republicans, the Libertarians, and the Green Party, and the Constitution Party. Those five have gained national recognition. I don't think a candidate from any of those five parties should ever have to go through the hoops, the ballot access hoops that states put them through. See, here I am in Pennsylvania, right? I'm sure you're aware that you've got a little bit of a Senate debate or a Senate race going on here this time around, right? Senator Pat Toomey has decided to retire. And we got Dr. Oz, the carpetbagger from New York that moved over just for a Senate seat, versus Fetterman, a Mel Brooks version of Frankenstein's monster. But the Constitution Party has a candidate too. The Libertarian Party has a candidate too. Where have they been? See, the Constitution Party candidate, well, he didn't make it through all of the gazillion hoops that the state requires to be on the ballot. So he suddenly becomes a write-in candidate. Oftentimes you need X number of signatures to get on a ballot. Okay, that's fine. I could see that. But one of the other things is you have to have a campaign account with at least X number of dollars in it before you can get on the ballot. Now, who would make such a rule? Why does it matter? If I want to run for Senate, by walking across the state holding a sign and not spend a dollar, not raise a penny, if I want to do it by walking around the state, gathering signatures, holding a sign, that's my choice. I don't need a campaign fund for that. I don't need to have a certain amount of money for that. No. But the Democrats and the Republicans, well, they always have enough money. Don't they? So they make these rules so that these other parties can't get on ballots. They act as a uniparty, working together to keep everybody else out. You're listening to this network. You already know that. It's parties that have become the problem. Having the same two parties controlling government for this long, that's been the problem. They get along too well. They are each other's controlled opposition now. They know what the other guy's going to say, and they know that the other guy doesn't really mean it for the most part. They like it that way. They don't want third parties in power. We know that. Why do you almost never see the third party people on debate stages? How do you think that would go over? Could you imagine if all five of those nationally recognized political parties were automatically guaranteed a seat at the presidential debate stage? You imagine what it would look like to have a Libertarian and a Constitution Party person up there pointing out the flaws in both the Democrats and the Republicans? Or the Green Party person? I don't know. Flying a kite to power their phone? I don't know. We'd have more choices. We the people, we might be able to pick somebody who actually has our own best interest at heart. We might be able to pick enough people to break up the uniparty, the cabal in control. these rules about primaries, they're all done at your state level. So again, your state legislature is very important. It was your state legislature that asked for, pushed, and ratified the 17th Amendment and changed the structure in this country. It is your state legislators that are passing resolutions like the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, trying to fundamentally alter our nation. It is your state legislatures that pass the rules about ballot access and primary elections in your state. It's your state legislatures you really need to pay attention to. Hey, it's time for the top of the hour break. Be back in 3 minutes to finish this conversation with more of your phone calls.
Take all our money and send it abroad. We must take America back. We need prayer in the schools and more things made in USA. It's the least we can do for the red, white, and blue. We must take America back. We must take America.
Extendivite really works. Kate, great for bodybuilding or endurance athletes. I can't say enough about Extendivite. It brings more oxygen to your muscles while working out. I never bought this product for heart health, but to improve circulation, and I am not at all disappointed. I noticed an immediate boost in my gym performance, but I thought I would wait to review in case it was a placebo effect. It definitely was not. This is the most powerful supplement I have ever taken in 30 years of bodybuilding. I have taken everything. Extendivite outperforms them all. The ability to squeeze just one more rep or add just a few more pounds to the barbell depends on your ability to carry oxygen where it counts, deep inside your muscle tissues. The added benefits of heart and liver health I consider a bonus. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us
800-724-2719 extension 3. 800-724-2719 extension 3.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.